Techonomics on KGO 810. Welcome to this week's edition of Techonomics, and happy Thanksgiving weekend. We'll start with a look back at the political season that just ended. Host Jason Middleton chats with a veteran political operative, pundit, and advisor. The question is just how technology has changed campaigning and election results. And regardless of politics, startup companies in Silicon Valley and beyond will press on. We have an author of a new book that maps out six steps to startup success, both in the marketplace and with investors. Then the demise of cash has been greatly exaggerated. Techonomics talks greenbacks with the Federal Reserve. And a new study that shows the most likely to carry cash are on opposite ends of the economic scale, the very rich and the very poor. Finally, a newer way to send money around the world. A new service called Zoom helps those who are looking to send home some walking around money. All that and a little more on this week's Techonomics.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Techonomics. I am your host, Jason Middleton. This Techonomics follows the Thanksgiving holiday, so we recorded a little earlier than usual. Now, that said, you can always check out what we've already aired. Get the Techonomics podcast of all our segments at kgoradio.com/Techonomics or wherever you get your podcasts. For this edition, we're leading the show with a look back in politics. We're on the holiday side of that presidential election, and about the only thing the nation seems to agree on right now is that the presidential election campaign, the actual stump speeches, the rallies, the TV coverage, well, it all needs to be shorter. Or is that just me? I guess we'll see. Now, while we figure that out, we have a political strategist and author to help us parse just what happened with the electorate this year and how our personal tech and devices may have impacted things. We'll follow up this interview with some talk around fake news on Facebook. Meanwhile, let's talk politics.
Rick Ritter, RBI Strategies and Research, Denver, Colorado, author of Looking for Votes in All the Wrong Places.
Let's talk about the birth of RBI Strategies and Research. Like, what's your creation story? How did you come into existence with this one?
I couldn't do anything else. I was a political organizer who then went briefly into radio. I produced a whole series of radio programs for ABC Radio, but ultimately I didn't feel I had the instincts to go very far in that industry. And I found that I was better suited for politics. And after 1984, the Democratic Convention in San Francisco, shortly thereafter, I started RBI Strategies and Research.
Some serious provenance there. You know, we're coming off of an event that we might want to discuss since your political background. It was an election. Have you had time to process what happened on Election Day?
Yeah, I've taken a pretty good look at voting behavior and attitudes of voters on Election Day.
Okay, and we'll get into the strategies and stuff, but I'm wondering, okay, you've looked at it through your lens, through your unique experience and career in this, and I'm wondering, what's your two-inch headline, and then we'll go down from there.
Voters wanted change. 70% of American voters thought that America was on the wrong track.
70% sounds like an overwhelming majority, so if 70% thought we were on the wrong track, why did it turn out 51-49?
Because voters did not have a sense that Donald Trump was, in fact, capable of being president.
Which remains to be seen. You mean capable to be elected president? We don't know.
Well, even capable to be elected president, but capable as president.
Okay. Is it fair to say there's angst and worry that's still moving through the electorate, or are we exhaling and embracing the future?
I think there's significant angst in the electorate. There's holding our breath for a sense of, you know, can it be as bad or is it going to be as good as it could be?
Since then, we have seen two approaches from the opposition to a Trump presidency, right? We have some people saying we're going to fight this tooth and nail for the rest of the next 4 years until we can have another election. And we see others, a little bit of acquiescence, let's give them a chance. That's kind of the tone we got from Hillary Clinton and President Obama. And I'm wondering, in your experience coming out of an election, which way have you seen which way work best, I guess is my question.
I think the question of what works best is really up to the President of the United States, which way he wants to take his administration. If he wishes to take it in the direction of what he said during the election campaign, you will see continued opposition and protest in a significant manner, and I suggest that will grow. However, if he begins some form of outreach with Democrats, with more moderate Republicans, you may see some mitigation in those protests as people wait and see. But this is really largely up to Donald Trump.
We're speaking with Rick Ritter. He's a longtime political strategist and an author. His newest book is Looking for Votes in All the Wrong Places. I imagine, given your background and your career in politics and your book, Looking for Votes in All the Wrong Places, we mentioned 22 rules of campaign management. Is there one that was broken by the Clinton campaign that stands out for you?
There is a chapter called Beware of Spouses. And in that chapter, we talk about the problems of spouses, whether it be in the grocery store, where voters gravitate to tell them all sorts of elements about what's going wrong with their spouse's campaign, to one spouse who decided she would go bare-breasted down I-5. But when I look at Hillary, it is clear that Bill Clinton's visit to the Attorney General on the tarmac in April had a significant impact on the election and on Comey's inability to be, shall we say, bipartisan, or at least reduce the political nature of his report.
Right. It seems like they needed Bill to be the big dog that stayed on the porch.
I would say that is exactly fair.
Right.
This is a brilliant man, but sometimes he's very gregarious, and when you're very gregarious, sometimes you meet with the wrong people.
Let's pivot to President-elect Trump. He already has a chief strategist. He's already announced that. So you're out of the running for that one, Rick. But
yeah, thank God.
Well,
yeah.
Let's put the hypothetical hat on for a second. You're a political strategist. Let's say you were the strategist for President-elect Trump moving into January. What do the next 6 weeks look like for the President-elect?
The first thing you have to do is go out and actually meet with the Democrats. That you need to be able to show Democrats that you're willing to work across the aisle to try to get things done. That, yes, the campaign was one thing, but how I'm going to govern is a completely different thing. Secondly, I go to Paul Ryan and say, okay, what are your two or three priorities that I can help you deliver or deliver to you so that you begin a working relationship with Paul Ryan?
All right, let's put on the other hat. Let's say you're advising the Democratic leadership on Capitol Hill as it exists today, Pelosi and Schumer. What's your advice on that side?
Well, my advice on that is similar. I'd go to the president and say, you know, you want to be able to work with us. You say you want to bring this country together. Here are our two or three critical needs that should fit within your philosophy and should make you look good with us as well as with your own voters.
If I got bushwhacked by this election result and I'm in the news business, I can only imagine what some political strategists for the Democratic Party and on the left must be feeling.
Many of us were bushwhacked. Some of us started to see it coming. 2 weeks ago, I was driving in my car and I was listening to a Donald Trump rally. And I walked into my office and I said, oh my gosh, Donald Trump is on message. And if he keeps this up, we're in big trouble.
Uh-huh.
And he did keep it up.
Yeah.
And we were in big trouble. We all looked at polls and saw Hillary leading, but we didn't look at polls seriously on the state-by-state basis. Nor did we look at polls over the last 2 to 3 days when voters' decisions are generally made. Remember, the average American thinks about politics about 12 minutes over the course of a 2-year period.
Wow.
And of that 12 minutes, about 4 to 6 minutes of it comes in the last 2 to 3 weeks of October, right before the election. So despite all our information back and forth about this presidential election, a good portion of Americans, probably 10%, don't begin to focus on this until the last 2 weeks.
Right. Why didn't the DNC see some of that coming?
I think that the problem you have is you really could not change Hillary Clinton into a populist. The difficulty is that Hillary Clinton could never be made into a populist. Mm-hmm. You can't make Genghis Khan into a peacenik. You have to take what you've got and amplify the characteristics of the candidate that has been nominated. And to suggest that Hillary Clinton could become a populist, particularly given the Wall Street, the problems with Bill and Glass-Steagall,
right,
it just wasn't going to happen.
Right.
Therefore, you have to do one of two things, vilify the opposition or try to change your positions, which then makes you look like a flip-flopper,
right,
and voters didn't trust her to begin with.
Right, right. And then you have shadows of John Kerry in the flip-flop.
Yes.
The business world, since the election, seems to have responded relatively positively to a unified Republican government. In your experience, specifically looking at national elections like this, is this a usual or typical bounce coming out of an election?
I think it is a typical bounce. Once they know who is Secretary of Treasury, other financial appointees, fiscal appointees, there may be a bounce down a little bit. But, yeah, I think there's a sense of optimism because of deregulation potential, as well as some sense, thank gosh, this election is over. It reduces uncertainty.
Well, Rick Ritter, this has been my pleasure. Thank you so much for your time and your expertise, and good luck with the book.
I'd love to come back again.
That was Rick Ritter. He's a veteran political pundit and strategist. He's also the author of Looking for Votes in All the Wrong Places, Tales and Rules from the Campaign Trail. The book has 22 rules on running a campaign in the 21st century. There is, however, no mention of generating false headlines and pushing that fake news out on Facebook or Google or both. Well, at least not yet. There's no rule. Facebook and Google are addressing their policies when it comes to fake news, headlines and stories that have zero basis in reality. And apparently, millions of online users share that lack of reality. Two examples, false claims like Pope Francis shocks world endorses Donald Trump for president. He did not. And FBI agent suspected in Hillary email leaks found dead in apartment in murder-suicide. Yeah, that did not happen. A BuzzFeed analysis shows that of the top 20 political stories posted on Facebook towards the end of the campaign, total engagement of fake news stories beat out reality. In the final weeks before the election, there were 8.7 million engagements with fake news. There were 7.3 million engagements with actual facts. A couple of quick tips here. The art of satire is sadly on the decline in this country. Satire takes thought from the author as well as the audience. Lastly, it's the internet. If you're not using the largest salt lick you can find when consuming internet stories, then grow up. And then thank the founders for the First Amendment. Coming up after this short break, we have a serial entrepreneur and investor talking about his new book, which, if you read it right, is basically a dummy's guide to a successful startup. I'm Jason Middleton, and this is Techonomics. Come on back.